Like, there's not a single fucking joke in that movie. Batman, Superman. The closest there is the "I thought she was with you" line. When Batman emailed her. Like, you fucking emailed her to let her know what's going on. So you don't get to pull that shit. Like, oh, movie's so terrible.
It was not a good movie.
No, I'm sure there's more than
not a good movie.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Who will win? I'm Dave, joined by my winner of a co-host, Ryan.
I'm a winner. I got a t-shirt to prove it.
And we are Movies on Up. Our tagline this week, who will win? If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter, @moviesonup. This is one of my favorite episodes of the year. First week of July. We are halfway through the year. So what better time for a halftime show? This is our 2016 halftime show. It's kind of our first six-month look back at what's going on with the movies this year. We'll give our favorite movies of the year so far, throw out some other than Rogue One that we're looking forward to for the rest of the year.
I'm out then.
And just kind of go from there. How do you feel about 2016 so far?
I feel like this is an episode that I would like to have pushed back like 2 weeks. As I was starting to compile my list, or it was sort of being compiled organically throughout the first 6 months of the year, I'm looking at it going, oh, there's a lot of comic book movies on here. Because there's been a lot of comic book movies this year, for sure. And there were movies that just kind of slipped through the cracks that I wasn't able to see. And there was sort of a mad dash to see them all within the last week, just hoping that I wouldn't have to put X-Men on my list because I saw that movie and I didn't want to have five comic book movies. But I feel like if you're 12 years old, this has been a kick-ass year for you. Maybe a little bit younger than that, maybe like 8. You've got your comic book movies. The family movies have done really, really, really well. But I've heard it from multiple people in multiple different media that where are the movies for adults? I think they're all on the internet. But if you are somebody who wants to go to a movie and for whatever reason you don't want to see a superhero movie, there really hasn't been much for you this year.
Here's where we'll disagree. Usually at this point, I think last year I had 4 movies in my top 5, and then I put SpongeBob Sponge Out of Water as my 5th just because that was another movie I had seen.
Right.
Years before that, I've had movies that were nowhere near my final top 10 list of the year, and I was just reaching to get to 5. This year, I could do a legit top 10. I have 10 movies. I would love to do a 10-1.
But how many of those are family movies? And I'm not saying that they're bad.
3.
And
3.
That's, okay.
Yeah. Right. It's a weird question because are the movies better this year? Am I just seeing more movies? But then on the flip side, I generally don't waste my time on stuff. I don't just see stuff for the sake of seeing stuff. Like, if I want to see it, I'll watch it, and I've gotten picky enough to know my likes, so I'm not disappointed a whole lot. So, I mean, there's at least 10 movies this year that I wanted to see that did not let me down. For me, it's a strong year because of these 10 movies. I mean, I left off the 2 comic book movies. I left them out of my top 5 just because
I didn't have to put them on.
I figured either you'll bring them up or they'll get talked about at another time. I wanted to use it for movies that I don't think will be in yours. But, I mean, I could go all 10 of these. If this was my end of the year list, these are 10 movies that if they're there at the top of the list at the end of the year, I'm okay with that. Because none of these I feel like are just on there because I don't have options because it's only been 6 months.
Right. I don't feel like I had to put anything on.
Like, a couple years ago, I had that It's a Disaster on there just because, hey, it was a movie I'd seen. Like,
and it was
Life After Beth, I think, was on there once because it's like, I'd seen that movie. These are movies that I really like.
I really, really like my top 3. There's definitely a line between number 3 and number 4 where my top 3 movies, I'll be shocked if they're not in my top when it comes to the end of the year. My 4 and 5 probably wouldn't be. But they were both movies that, to this point in the year, I mean, I've liked them. I'd watch them again, for sure. One of them, actually, my number 5, I fully intend to watch again because I feel like I need to because I'm still not sure I know what the hell I just watched.
Yeah, the hardest part was narrowing it down to the 5 out of these 10 because there's no line for me. Like, usually it's like, okay, my top 2 I love. I feel strongly about my top 5. I feel strongly about the 5 also-rans that I have, who they're pretty much also-rans by default because I didn't have any more room in my top 5. You could interchange them. Of the 10 movies, you could put them in really any order. And I'm still happy about them. If I'm breaking them down, they'd all be in the upper echelon. So, I mean, it's going to be tough at the end of the year because we usually do a top 10. There's already 10 there that are going to be hard to top. So
you have to make room for Rogue One.
Rogue
One. It has
to
go in there somewhere.
Morgan and a couple others that I'll list. Like, those are two that I expect to just to be there. But enough about our lists. Let's actually get down to our list. So your number 5 that you still don't know what's going on and you want to rewatch it. Your number 5 favorite movie of 2016 so far.
My number 5 was one that I don't know if you and I talked about it. I'm sure we did. And I think it was a movie we both wanted to see. And we haven't talked about it yet. So I don't know if you saw it recently or saw it and had kind of a similar response I did. And that was Jeff Nichols' Midnight Special with Michael Shannon, Joel Edgerton, Jaden Lieberherr, Kirsten Dunst, and Adam Driver. I had really high hopes for this movie and specifically what it might do for Jeff Nichols. I liked Mud and Take Shelter a lot. Those were pretty small movies that I think were acted wonderfully, but I don't think that it generated much buzz for Nichols as a director, which is kind of unfair. McConaughey and Shannon, respectively, I think came out of those movies with a ton of momentum. And the movies themselves seemed a little bit indie for kind of a mass audience. And this year specifically, when we're getting a huge quote-unquote alien sequel in Independence Day, I thought that maybe this, and calling it an alien movie is not entirely factual, but I thought that this would be like, all right, well, if Jeff Nichols can make a Jeff Nichols alien movie that was smart and accessible, maybe it would be able to find some traction. It failed at the box office, did not do very well at all. And I think as a movie, as the kind of movie I was hoping it to be, it failed. It is wonderfully acted, as you would expect, by Edgerton and Shannon. But the kid, Jaden Lieberherr, was really, really good. Most of what he was asked to do in the movie was physical. The dialogue he had certainly wasn't the heaviest lifting he had in the movie, but I think he still did give a really expressive and good performance. Not bad for a kid who really just made his theatrical debut about 2 years ago in St. Vincent, which I thought he was good in too, opposite Bill Murray. At best, I thought that this movie had the potential to be like a Britt Marling-esque genre movie, and we talk very, very highly about Another Earth and Sound of My Voice, and Nichols is a director that is that intelligent. I thought that maybe he could make a sci-fi movie that was more accessible than those are, if you want to call them sci-fi movies. Certainly Another Earth would be. But he seemed to at least aim way too high in this movie. The visuals are really, really cool, which is not necessarily a staple in his movies. They're mostly...
He's never done anything that's visual before.
Right. But seeing this, he can. Yeah. He pulled the visuals off in this phenomenally. He kind of added that color to his palette, if you will. You're still going to get great performances, which you get here. You're going to get some really nice visuals now. He's proven that he can do that as a director. I just don't know if he might be better off directing somebody else's work, because his is just, I'm okay with a movie that's not accessible. I sit through those all the time. I can enjoy them. I liked this. I'm still not sure I understood the motivation for the movie at all. I'm not sure what Jaden's character was supposed to be doing, what his purpose was. I know what Michael Shannon's purpose was basically to drive this kid out to the middle of nowhere at an appointed time so that an appointed event could happen. Throughout most of the movie, you're not sure what that appointed event is going to be. And even after you see it, you're like, I still don't know what it is. It's a movie that going into it, I knew little and I didn't want to know too much.
And you don't know much more.
Right.
After.
But yeah, but after sitting through it, I still don't know much more. But I do think I need to watch it again just in case I miss something.
You know what?
I would watch it again.
I'm glad you brought this one up because it was my number four, but now I'll just replace that with one of the other movies so I get to talk about another movie. I really love this movie. I really, really like this movie. Mud, I wasn't as nuts about, but
right.
I think Take Shelter is one of the best performance movies in the past decade because of Michael Shannon's performance. It completely hinges on him. And then the ending, it is a very much another Earth-type ending. So I get that comparison. Like, I feel like between Eccles and Britt Marling, there are some similarities in their writing style. They're slow burners. But
you don't get that payoff necessarily in this.
Not necessarily. But I like this movie because it is making, to keep the Marling comparisons, The East is her most accessible movie, but still not super accessible. I feel like this is that to that. It's marketable. You can market it as accessible. It may not be as accessible as it pretends to be, but to me, it's worth it. Joel Edgerton, he's probably the third or fourth lead in this movie.
Yeah.
Is phenomenal. And I mean, I love Edgerton, but he's so understated in this. He even says it at a point. I forget the exact line. Why are you doing, I believe. And that's all it is. He's a guy who's going against everything he does, his career. He's going against what he does for a living because he believes Michael Shannon. He believes in the kid. He's taken that chance. And Michael Shannon, it's not as a tour de force performance.
It's not as intense.
It's not exactly. He's getting from point A to point B. That's his job. And Joel Edgerton is to get him from point A to point B. So, I mean, Michael Shannon's not bringing the intensity he did in Take Shelter, but he's still very, very good. And then Adam Driver as the comic relief, kind of. I think some of the Adam Driver scenes are really, really funny.
They're not ha-ha funny.
No,
but it's sort of just his character is so different than anything else. You have really serious people, and he's trying to do something, and he's serious about it, but his personality is a little less.
Just the look on his face when he calls him out by name in this room full of people, and just the line to Joel Edgerton, would it be too much trouble to punch me in the face? That's so good. And then at the end, where he just introduces himself, like something about Adam Driver's character, like I really like. And Kristen Dunst doesn't do much, but she's competent for what she does. And the kid, but really, Eccles is the star of this movie. Like it is his pacing, it's his storytelling. And yeah, it's not cut and dry. You're not getting what you expect, but I feel like everything J.J. Abrams tried to do with Super 8, I feel like this movie did so much better. I feel like this was a grown-up, modern E.T.
And certainly that was what he was going for. He was going for E.T., Close Encounters.
It felt like an indie Steven Spielberg.
Yes, but in the Spielberg stuff, you understood the motivations for everybody, and there was a very clear payoff for that. Like, E.T. was trying to get home. You knew that's what he was trying to do. And I'm not saying that
because Jacob, though. Well, or whatever his name is, Jared. I forget.
This one, it was more ambiguous, but I don't think that means it's adult. Just because things are, for lack of a better word, they're spelled out, they're specified, it doesn't mean that it's for children. E.T., a better movie than this.
Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, that's an all-time classic.
Right, yeah. I'm not going out on much of a limb there. But I don't understand the motivation for the cult, for example. Like, what were they trying to do?
I don't think they knew. That's why I like that line from Joel Edgerton is just like, I believe. I feel like that's what was driving the cult, is that the guy was harnessing him and they believed that it was leading to this event that they were all going to be a part of. Like that they were Heaven's Gate, you know, Marshall Applewhite. They're putting on their sneakers and pants and they believed.
They believed in what he could do, but they weren't.
They didn't know what was coming, but they believed something was going to happen and they wanted to be a part of that because.
But they wanted it to happen. It's not like they were going with him. They were trying to get him back.
Correct. And that, my one beef is that I feel like the cult should have been used more in the movie.
Right.
When they come at the hotel, I like that scene because it kind of throws you off.
Yeah.
I wish that the cult would have been expanded a little bit more on and used a little bit more. I still liked the movie a lot. I really, really did like this movie. Based on the trailers, it was one of the ones of the year I'm like most excited for. Did it live up to that? No. Is it one of my favorite 10 favorite movies of the year so far? Yeah, absolutely. Even though it's not in my top five. Wink, wink. I do adore this movie, mostly for the performances of Edgerton Driver and Shannon, because I think they're really, really good. And, I mean, that's what Eccles' strong point is. So to give me a character-driven story, that's what he does. And he tried to give you a character-driven story with a little bit more to look at. Because Mud was all in one, you know. They've been contained.
The characters were certainly driving the vehicle. They were driving the truck. I'm just not sure there was a lot of actual cargo in the truck.
I get your complaints, but I think it was a great experience. And maybe you'll feel that on the second viewing. My number five is a new addition to the list. A few weeks ago or last week, maybe, we talked about The Purge. And this movie didn't even come to mind when I was talking about how I wish the Final Destination movies were anthology. I wish The Purge were anthology. Earlier this year, 10 Cloverfield Lane came out, directed by Dan Trachtenberg, starring John Goodman, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and John Gallagher Jr. I hate Cloverfield. I hate that movie so much. But I'd have been okay with a sequel to it if you did just somebody else in New York that night.
Or presumably, you know, maybe a different city.
Yeah, basically the found footage is what made me just turn off Cloverfield. This comes at it. It's not Cloverfield 2. Mm-hmm. It's not Cloverfield A New Age. It's not anything. It's just 10 Cloverfield Lane. It's got the Cloverfield name. Is this movie related? No.
No.
Not really. Not at all. I mean,
no, I don't think at all.
Exactly. But it's really, really good. And I like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Mm-hmm. I think her career has been, she's way underrated. Like, she went from being just this pretty girl, that's her role, is just pretty girl, to just taking some chances and just making these movies to where she's shown herself like as a powerhouse performance and Smashed especially. So I mean, she has this phenomenal talent, and it's on display here because the movie is her and Goodman more intense than I've seen him in a decade probably. This is the Goodman I love.
It's Barton Fink-esque Goodman.
I think when this movie came out, we did a favorite John Goodman movie episode. This is the Goodman that I love.
That would make it on the list.
And then John Gallagher Jr., who the only thing I'd ever seen him in was this movie Hush that I watched on your recommendation where I really liked him in there. And then he's really good in this. It's a very, very contained story for 90% of it. It's somewhat predictable.
Yes, it's very predictable. The turns that it takes, and it's kind of starts the movie in one genre and then goes to another.
And then another.
Right, exactly. And I liked that, but you could kind of see each of those turns coming.
It does hit a point near the end, like as the third act starts. I think one thing kicks everything in motion. That was a nice surprise. That I did not see coming. But it's a good movie. Like, it's a good psychological survival movie, and Goodman and Winstead are so good, and you know, the chemistry between Winstead and Gallagher I think is really, really good, because they're two characters that you don't really know a lot about and you don't really get to know a lot about. They kind of trust each other, and then you have Goodman, who they're trusting because they kind of have to at this point. It's just a really interesting movie, and it's really, really, it's definitely worth a watch. And I feel like that's underselling it, because I think it's a legit good movie. And then when it does take that turn and it does happen in the climax, there it took me somewhere I didn't really expect.
It did seem like this movie was sort of on a pendulum. You would start off assuming that Goodman is the bad guy and that he's lying about everything. And then the pendulum swings and he gains some credibility. And then it swings back the other way and he loses the credibility. And it just kind of does go back and forth. And seemingly, like a pendulum, every time it swings, it maybe picks up more momentum and takes a more sharp of a turn.
And eventually somebody shoots the pendulum in the head and catches you off guard. And then everything goes insane from there.
Yeah, pretty much. I like the movie a lot. And my number five really went through about four different movies. I settled on Midnight Special because I like it better than Cloverfield Lane, and apparently so do you. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
My list just took a turn because Midnight Special was my number four. Yeah. I replaced it with this and made it my number five. So,
my number four is another movie starring Joel Edgerton. It's been a good year for him thus far. It's Gavin O'Connor's Jane Got a Gun, also starring Natalie Portman and Ewan McGregor. I feel like this is a movie that we've been talking about since the birth of the podcast, and it's had a ton of cast changes, delays, and even a directorial change.
It was originally Fassbender was in it.
Yes. At one
Bradley
point,
Cooper, wasn't
Bradley
it?
Cooper was in. At one point, Jude Law was in.
Yeah.
Gyllenhaal was offered a role, but he declined. They were all supposed to be in this movie when it was directed by Lynn Ramsey.
That's it, Lynn Ramsey.
She dropped out on the first day of shooting. So all of these things, like cast changes and directorial changes and delays, that's not a good sign for a movie.
And it ends up with, what was this, a January, February release?
Yeah. If you have one of those things happen to you, you're in trouble. This movie had all three, which is pretty much a death sentence. But it ended up with the director of Warrior, that we both love, ended up with Natalie Portman, who's great.
Joel, like the only constant.
Right, yes. Joel Edgerton, who was around for a lot of it. But
just in a different role.
Yes. And then Ewan McGregor, who was kind of the fill-in. And that's what we end up with. To be left with that at the end of the day is pretty good. They also started with a 2011 Blacklist script, which again tells you how long gestating this movie was, that the script was being kicked around 5 years ago. I just happened to be walking through the video store one day and saw it on the shelf, and I was like, oh, hey, that movie came out. And after watching it, this movie deserved a much better fate than, oh, this movie came out. It's actually a really, really competent Western, which is something that we don't get a lot. It didn't have to be a Western. It could have taken place modern day. Could have had a gang basically coming to kill a rival gang member or something like that. The fact that it was a Western certainly didn't detract from it. It was well done within that setting. I do take a couple exceptions with some of the directing choices. I felt like the movie rather abruptly hops between what was present for the movie and past events that led up to it. And sometimes it did feel like a train car just jumping tracks. Sometimes it was done very smoothly. Other times, not so much. And that's really the only problem I have with the movie. I think that despite all the changes, they ended up with a pretty damn good villain in Ewan McGregor. If you can imagine, like, a really terrible sociopathic version of Snidely Whiplash, that's basically what you have. He's got the greased mustache, and he's about a quarter charming and three quarters sell you into prostitution, which makes him kind of magnetic. Portman gives a very good performance trying to elicit help from an ex-boyfriend, or really an ex-husband, to help her current husband and baby daddy. So she's very locked into this desperate sort of performance, and Edgerton is obviously still in love with her at some point, and he's doing the conflicted thing, I'm just here for money, or whatever. And their motivations are pretty well set, and they're static throughout the movie. McGregor's great. I mean, he's a scumbag, but the first time you meet him, he's a perfect gentleman, but he's got that kind of air of scumbaggery behind him. I mean, I thought all three leads in this were very, very good. And with those three leads, it shocks me that Attack of the Clones could be that bad. With that cast, how is that not a better movie?
Yeah, see, I haven't seen this yet. This is one of those that I just kind of forgot about. Like, it was prominent when we were doing news episodes so many years ago.
Because it was always making news for having another person drop out.
Who ended up being the husband? Was that Noah Emmerich or whatever his name is?
Yes.
I believe, if I remember right, Edgerton was originally the husband.
Right.
Cooper was the bad guy.
Yes.
Fassbender was the gunslinger. Yeah. Cooper dropped out. They moved Edgerton to the villain, and that's when Emmerich came in. But then when Fassbender dropped out, they just moved Edgerton
to the gunslinger.
To the gunslinger. And they
plugged in Obi-Wan Kenobi.
They offered it to Gyllenhaal. They offered it to Gyllenhaal before Edgerton made the switch. Gyllenhaal turned down the gunslinger. Edgerton moved to that, and then they got McGregor as the bait. I'd watch a documentary on the making of that movie.
except I don't think one person could complete the documentary, because I feel like they would be replaced at some point inevitably midway through.
I haven't seen this. I want to. And my number four, on the other hand, is a movie that I saw in theaters, and then when it came out on demand, it's one of those where you ever rent a movie once on demand and you watch it two or three times in the 24 hours you have it. And then just a few days later, your mom comes to visit and you realize, like, I'll put it on again. So you rent it twice within a week.
You rent Deadpool a lot, right?
No. And the kids love it. a lot. It is from this year, directed by Byron Howard and Rich Moore. It's Zootopia. Zootopia was one of those that it had an odd, I believe it came out in like March or so.
Yeah.
Which is an odd spot for a movie like this, but that's around the time that Lego Movie came out, and it was one of the bigger family movies of the year. Zootopia is a really good movie. And I'll leave it at that. It's not a good kids movie. It's not a family movie that there's enough in there for adults. It's a legit good movie. Jennifer Goodwin is hotter than she's ever been as the bunny cop.
Oh, that's creepy.
Jason Bateman is good. I mean, the cast is awesome. Every movie that has voiceover work, Idris Elba should be in it. Jitty Slate, Nate Torrance, Bunny Hunt, Tommy Chong, J.K. Simmons, like Octavia Spencer, Alan Tudyk, Shakira. It's so good. And it couldn't have worked out better because it's such an allegory on racism and xenophobia and prejudices and looking at people and associating this random person on the street with something bad that somebody that believes the same as them did, even though there's no other correlation other than they believe in the same thing. It's really deep. Goodwin and Bateman, their characters' interactions together are very, very good. It leads to a nice payoff. It almost feels like two movies because you think you're getting a cop whodunit movie and then they solve the case halfway through. Then that's when the movie kicks in. And it's what really sets it apart. That's when the socio-political analysis comes in. And it says so much and it means so much. And it gets its point across all while being a kid's movie. And it never feels preachy because it isn't talking about Muslims and blacks and any of that. This little cute bunny.
Foxes.
Yeah, this little cute bunny talking about
predators,
lions and foxes and stuff and otters. But it gets the point across. And there are good jokes. The Let It Go joke that Idris Elba drops is one of my favorite jokes in a movie this year. Everybody's so good in this movie. Jenny Slate, she's going to have a big year. She's in Secret Life of Pets.
She's already had a big year.
She's dating Captain America. Jenny Slate is one of those that you're going to see her voice pop up in a lot of movies. Idris Elba has had three awesome voice performances already this year, and this is one of them. So Zootopia is not just a good kids movie. Like, it's a legit good movie.
It's made a ton of money this year. The movie's fine. The problem that I have with it is it did seem very much like Disney Animation Studios. And what I mean by that is if this was a Disney Pixar movie,
it didn't have the heart that Pixar adds.
It didn't have the heart, and I don't think it was as clever. You're right in that it's an allegory for racism and gender roles even. But I think that just changing instead of people or blacks and Muslims, they were predators and prey. You know what I mean? Like, that seemed like a fairly straightforward way to do that. Whereas I feel like Pixar, for God's sake, like, anthropomorphized feelings. That's how nuts those people are. And the story is that if Pixar were to have made Zootopia, not that Zootopia is a bad movie. It's good. I think kids will enjoy it. My girlfriend loved it. But I just don't think it was as clever, because it wasn't done by the geniuses at Pixar, which is maybe unfair to say to any animated movie that Pixar would have done it better, because 100 times out of 100, that's probably true. But just because it was a Disney Studios movie, I thought, a couple years ago, as good as Zootopia ended up being, it would have been that much better with the Pixar guys behind it. Just my thoughts, I guess.
I think we're at year number 3. Or am I going?
That was your 4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're at my number 3.
All right.
Which is a movie very, very similar to Zootopia. It's great family entertainment that I saw opening night as well. It was Deadpool with Ryan Reynolds, Monica Bahrain, and Dave's all-time favorite, Ed Skrein. While perhaps my first two movies were maybe slight disappointments, it's tough to call Jane Got a Gun a disappointment when you're thinking, oh, God, this has got to end up being...
The fact it got made in the first
place. Right, yeah, that's kind of astounding. But they're both still good, but not quite maybe what I had in mind. Deadpool is exactly the movie that I hoped it would be. At this point, comic book movies are really anything but a gamble. But an R-rated major release was something it's completely different. I mean, it's only happened just a handful of times. And really, Watchmen is the closest that you have to an R-rated movie that had to be R-rated and an adaptation of a comic book. But even that was a much more niche book. It didn't have kind of that mass appeal and didn't have, well, I mean, it did have a giant marketing campaign behind it. But I think Deadpool was maybe, on the one hand, a little bit riskier. But seeing the way it came out, there's no way that they could have made anything differently. They couldn't have made a PG-13 version of Deadpool. The character wouldn't allow it. And there's no way that they could have had anyone other than Ryan Reynolds playing the character, because he was absolutely fantastic. The director, Tim Miller, I thought was kind of an interesting and somewhat of a Marvel choice, despite the fact that it's not really a Marvel Studios movie. He's a first-time feature director. He had some visual effects background that showed in the action. I thought the action in the movie was very well choreographed, whether it was a fight scene or a shootout. I just thought the physicality in the movie was really, really well done. The only flaw that I think this movie has is it doesn't have a really strong villain. The Marvel villains have all been pretty good. And if you think back to Iron Man and you go all the way through Captain America from this year, you could probably name at least one of the villains because they're that strong. Deadpool really didn't have a villain. I mean, he did. There was a bad guy in it. But the movie was carried so completely by Reynolds and the character of Deadpool, which I think just kind of shows how great he was in that role. It was almost like he was sort of fighting himself throughout the whole movie, but he was so engaging that you just wanted to watch it anyway. He's just so charismatic in that role that he does it completely all by himself. And I can't wait to see another Deadpool movie. And if they never introduce like Wolverine or any more well-known characters, it's going to be fine, because Deadpool is a guy that, you know, if you never read the comics, I can't imagine people not really laughing out loud at that movie.
Yeah, see, I left this out of my top five because I figured it'd come up either way. I did love it. The Marvel Studios movies, I'll disagree with you on the villains there. I think for the most part, generally pretty weak. They have good ideas, but they're not really developed as well. This movie, I was okay with Francis or Ajax not really being, because he was irrelevant. This wasn't a superhero save the day movie. There was no evil plot that Ajax was running.
It was a revenge movie.
It was a revenge movie. I like that about Ant-Man. Ant-Man was such a small scale. Like, yeah, if that tech gets out, it's a big deal, but it was more Scott Lang protecting his family. This is just Ryan Reynolds trying to hunt the bastard that ruined his life. It was a self-contained revenge thriller, or revenge movie. And I liked that. I hated Man of Steel and the non-linear storytelling because it didn't make sense. This took a non-linear story and made it make sense. Ryan Reynolds carried the movie.
And when Deadpool is the narrator of your story, he's not exactly together. So it makes sense that it would be disjointed.
They pulled off breaking the fourth wall. It's a make or break thing. It either comes off really, really lame or you make it work. They did a good job making it work. They did a good job building up Ryan Reynolds and Morena Baccarin's relationship to where you realize what he's fighting for. You realize what was taken away from him. I thought Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead were really good for what they were supposed to do. Gina Carano was good as Angel Dust. Like, the fight scenes were great. The bridge scene that sets off everything was fantastic. I mean, it was done right. And I don't like Fox. I don't want to see him in an X-Men movie. I want to see Deadpool 2 with Cable. And
right.
That's where they're going. X-Force, I could see it working. But more Deadpool on screen is good, because Ryan Reynolds is he's as perfect for Deadpool as Jackman is for Wolverine. So as Downey Jr. is for Stark, like as Evans is for Captain America. So, I mean, he's in that echelon of that's the right character for the right actor.
As Henry Cavill is.
It took him a decade to get it right, but they got it right. I just hope it doesn't lead to R-rated superhero movies for the sake of R-rated superhero movies. And Kevin Feige, the Marvel head, had the perfect summary when somebody asked, like, hey, so Deadpool showed that R-rated superhero movies. Does Marvel have anything lined up? And he said Deadpool wasn't successful because it was R-rated. Mm-hmm. He said, Deadpool did what we try to do with Marvel. Like, speaking of Marvel, he's like, if you stay as close to the source material as you can, that's when you succeed. Deadpool stayed as close to the source material as they could.
Which is R-rated source
material.
That
was the character that they wanted to make, and they didn't tone it down. They didn't change him, and that's why it was successful. You know, Captain America, Iron Man, like, those characters are the characters from the comics. Yeah, the stories aren't the same, but you're adapting those characters that have been loved for decades. And that's what they did. They pulled that off. I thought it was great, and I can't wait to see more Deadpool. My number three, from 2016, directed by Peter Atencio, written by Jordan Peele and Alex Rubin. All three of those people are very key players in Key and Peele. It is Keanu, starring Keegan-Michael Key and Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame. I love this movie so much. The premise is just Peele's going through a bad breakup. Keegan-Michael Key's wife's out of town for the weekend. He tries to cheer him up. They find a kitty, and the kitty goes missing, so they try to get the kitty back because that's the only thing that's kind of turned his life around. And they end up pretending to be gangsters and going off on these crimes that they don't belong in. I've said for a while that Keegan-Michael Key is a movie star. He's going to be one of those. Compare him to Damon Wayans, was a movie star in the 90s. Like, almost where Eddie Murphy. I could see Keegan-Michael Key having that kind of movie career where he's just headlining movies because he's shown up in small parts in so many movies and he steals the scene in everything. Think of Hell Baby, Pitch Perfect 2, anything. Like, he's been in a ton, and everything he's in, he's hilarious. And this is great because him and Peele have that great chemistry together. And it's not a show for one or the other. It's a Key and Peele show. Like, they're equal parts where you replace either one of them, you have a completely different movie. Method Man's in it. He's fantastic. It's so funny because it is their humor. Key and Peele is one of the greatest sketch shows ever. Because it was smart, it was witty, their chemistry just built everything. This movie carries all of that over into a crime movie. And there's so many good laughs, and it's hilarious. It sets up this ridiculous world. Like, it starts off with the shootout at the church. It's ridiculous. You know you're getting that kind of crime movie, and then you're introduced to their characters, and Keanu is an adorable little kitty. And there's just so much to this movie, and I absolutely adored it. I had such high expectations for it, and they were met. Like, I love this movie.
My number two is another crime movie that I had very, very high expectations for, and it delivered. It was Shane Black's The Nice Guys, starring The Nice Guys, Ryan Gosling, Russell Crowe, and Matt Bomer. From the moment I saw the first trailer for Shane Black's newest, I was hype. The first couple minutes invoked everything that I loved about Black's work, specifically Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And if you listened a couple months back, you're probably well aware of how much we like that movie. And for all the talk of spiritual sequels we had earlier when we did our Dazed and Confused episode, I think that March and Healy are kind of like an alternate reality version of Harry and Perry. And as much as Black mastered the buddy action movie in the 80s and into the 90s, which he was the highest paid screenwriter at that time for good reason, because he was making giant blockbusters that today are still movies that people rip off because they're that damn good. I think that now he's kind of mastered that neo-noir genre while managing to kind of make it his own by having all of the tropes of the neo-noir genre, but putting in his tropes, his humor, his jokes that he makes in every movie. The only complaint that I have is just, I think that Gosling was just a little bit much in that. Maybe a little bit too much buffoonery from him for me. The moments of clarity that he has where he seems like a very, very effective investigator, I think are kind of overshadowed by the Hunter S. Thompson type antics that he seems to get himself into throughout the entirety of the movie. I laughed my ass off at those antics. They were very, very funny, but I think the movie might have been better served trying to space out some of the comedy rather than hit you with it all the time. I don't know if there was necessarily bad jokes in there. It's just maybe the humor as a whole would have been more effective if it would have had some room to breathe. It seemed like it's a comedy, yes. I mean, the pacing of the jokes, there are comedies that don't have as many jokes as this movie did, which works really, really well as a comedy, works really, really well as a crime movie. And I think that both of those guys, they did a great job playing Shane Black characters. When it comes to dynamics, he writes that dysfunctional dynamic very, very well. And certainly the relationship between March and Healy doesn't get off on the best foot, so to speak. But they do an excellent job of kind of writing that dysfunctional group or dysfunctional team and making them go forward. For all the reasons I love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I love The Nice Guys. It's impossible to say if one is better than the other because they're so, so, so similar. I just feel like this one maybe got a little bit more of a push because of where Shane Black is in his career now, that maybe people are willing to see something like this and say, oh, this could be, you know, commercially successful. It could be accessible because of this guy now. I don't know that it was, you know, all that successful from a box office perspective, but I think it's a great movie. And I think once people find their way to it, I do think that they'll enjoy it.
Yeah, this one I've wanted to see. I just haven't had a chance to see. And my high school buddy Ward Roberts did have a bit part in it, the writer-director of Dust Up. So I will see it, and it might very well be on my end-of-the-year list. But that, I think, Warcraft are probably the only two that I could think of that I really want to see that I haven't seen.
And yet. You think that both of those might end up on
maybe
your...
I really love Duncan Jones. I'm giving Duncan Jones benefit of the doubt. My number two is a movie that sometimes you'll see a movie in... like April or March or so, and you'll think, why is this coming out now? Because it just seems like an award winner. Like, it feels like a movie that we should be talking about come the Oscars. And that's exactly how I feel about Jon Favreau's The Jungle Book. This movie is a damn masterpiece. It's beautifully directed by Favreau for doing everything pretty much on a green screen. It's an amazing piece of work by him. The kid, Neil Sethi, is really the only human in the movie, and the whole thing is on his shoulders, and he carries it without hyperbole. This kid should be in the talk for best actor at the end of the year. He's phenomenal. The CGI characters look amazing. Everything looks so good. And then the voice performances. Bill Murray is the perfect Baloo. Christopher Walken is the perfect King Louie. Scarlett Johansson is so hot as Ka. But then Idris Elba as Shere Khan is one of my favorite villain performances ever. I mean, it's up there with Benedict Cumberbatch in Star Trek Into Darkness. Like, it's such a good...
just above Darth Vader.
Yeah, it's such a good villain performance because it's... Idris Elba has this voice that's so smooth and so calming, but can be so terrifying. And he's just got that tone to where he'll either talk me to sleep or he'll just murder me as he... it comes off as Shere Khan. And this movie, like, it's almost breathtaking. Like, it's so weird. Like, I'm using all these cliche words, but that's how I feel about the movie. Like, it is a masterpiece. It's breathtaking. It's an achievement in filmmaking, I think, because everything... it's pretty much all green screen, and this kid delivers, and the voice cast is perfect. Lupita Nyong'o, she's in it. She's good. Like, everybody is so good at what they do in this movie, and I didn't have doubts of Favreau as a director. You know, I loved Swingers growing up. Iron Man was really good. Iron Man 2, not necessarily his fault, and then he returned to the smaller stuff with Chef, but, like, this movie, you see this, and it's like, he should be doing any movie he wants. Like, after seeing this, Jon Favreau should be able to make any movie he wants to make. It'll be a damn shame when the Oscars come around and this movie is only in there for technical stuff, because from a directing standpoint, from the kids' acting standpoint, it deserves a whole lot more than that.
Speaking of Iron Man, my number one stars Iron Man and a couple other superheroes as well. It is one of the movies that Dave left off his list so that we could gush about it jointly and he could sneak another movie on there, which I'm okay with. It is, of course, Anthony and Joe Russo's Captain America Civil War, starring Chris Evans, Bobby Downey Jr., Sebastian Stan, and a ton of other famous people that you know. This is my favorite Marvel movie, and that is not something that I say lightly. If you've followed this show from its genesis, you're well aware of our love for these Cape movies. And with very few exceptions, I think that they've managed to exceed the increasingly high expectations that we put on them. And by them, I mean Marvel movies in general. The Civil War storyline was huge. And for that to be contained into one movie, featuring this already huge cast and growing cast, introducing two heroes that would be getting their own movies in the coming years, I think would be a task that I would have my doubts that somebody like Joss Whedon could pull off. But in continuing, or depending on your point of view, perhaps starting the theme of Cleveland being undefeated this year, the Russos absolutely nailed this movie. Every Avenger, past, future, and present, got their showcase. Paul Rudd, I thought, was great as sort of an addition to the team in this movie. Falcon got some new toys that I thought were pretty well done and well adapted from the book. Wanda learned some new tricks. As much as we praise the Avengers movies for giving everybody their moments to shine, at some point you think that's going to have to bottom out, but not here. There were even more people, and they still managed to feature everyone and make them all look really, really cool. Where the movie really hit with me was the new guys, Black Panther and Spider-Man. Tom Holland absolutely nailed it. I cannot wait for Homecoming, and I can't wait to see him interact with the other heroes again. From Stark in the apartment to the conversations that he carried on with Bucky and Falcon and Cap, I think the writers did an amazing job of writing the Spider-Man that I love. The Russos, I think, did a great job of giving T'Challa some really awesome moves and like a unique style to the kick, kick, punch, punch. Pretty much everyone else in that movie kind of embodies. And for the most part, they did it with the fast-paced cuts that we praised them for in Cap 2. Daniel Brühl's Zemo, while I object to using the character of Zemo the way they did, I think that it was actually a really great villain. He was perfect for this story, trying to destroy the Avengers from the inside. He had a reason to do that. When you talk about the Sokovia Accords, he had a reason to be in favor of those as well. And I think that he was somewhat sympathetic up until the end. And I kind of hope this isn't the last that we see of him. He was great in the movie. More of him would be great. More of the Russos directing would be great. I can't wait to see them do the Infinity War because they're going to kill that too. I have no doubt at this point. Not that I was worried about them in this movie, but I think they've put it beyond all shadow of a doubt that they're more than capable of handling a movie like this. And more Spider-Man, please.
I was worried about them in the first half an hour because the first opening scene, it's very shaky cam. It was everything we praised them for not doing in Winter Soldier. I mean, that's just to get the ball rolling. I'm sure that's a budgetary thing, so I gave them a pass for that because as the movie went on, the action was great. The emotion was there. There's so many different emotions there, and we'll harp on this movie a lot, so I don't want to spend a ton of time on it, but I do want to go back to your point about the new characters and setting them up because Spider-Man came in and was just the ball of energy.
Yeah.
And he's just, you know, Homecoming is just going to be this like ray of sunshine. That's just a light, fun movie. I mean, it's going to fit in the Marvel, so it's going to have everything. But then you have Black Panther, who wasn't a fun character. He has this emotion to him, and he didn't have the fun scenes like the Spider-Man fight scene.
Right.
But he had the emotional scene with Zemo at the end where it's not that easy for you or whatever he says. Like, you don't get off that easy. Like, and when he's explaining what the Black Panther is, to where Cap's doing this because he signed up for the serum. He feels like it's his job. Tony's doing it. You know, he got a taste of being a hero and he can't get enough of it. Black Panther's doing this because that's what he was born to do. This is his birthright. Stark could give it up at any point. Stark could create Ultron to do the work for him. You know, like Captain America can walk away. Hawkeye could retire. This is what he was born to do. I'm really excited for the Black Panther movie because I feel like it'll be a darker Marvel kind of movie because it's not. It's going to be, there'll still be humor because there's going to be humor in any Marvel movie, but I feel like this one's going to carry so much more emotional depth and emotional weight. Like Ant-Man tried. Ant-Man did have a lot of emotion to it, but it's Paul Rudd.
Right.
Like it's Paul Rudd. So it's going to be light. Whereas to Black Panther with Chadwick Boseman, you have this actor who's in his whole career is, I mean, you could have nominated him for Jackie Robinson, for James Brown. He's been giving Oscar quality performances. So I think that script is just going to bring a ton of emotion and that awesome action with the suit and Ryan Coogler is directing it. The cast of that movie is awesome. Ryan Coogler, you know, Creed had heart, Fruitvale Station had heart. They're not pick me up.
They're not light.
light. So I think we're going to get that. And just seeing the how Black Panther was handled in Civil War and how Ryan Coogler makes movies, I think we're going to get a really different Marvel movie. And I think it's going to stand out. And I really can't wait. But I also can't wait for Spider-Man because that cast is also perfect. And Tom Holland he nailed it. He's Peter Parker.
It makes me less upset that they didn't end up going with Donald Glover for Peter Parker, though
he's in it.
Probably going to be Miles Morales, fingers crossed. I don't know.
He's in it somehow.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's Civil War was so good, and I know it'll come up again probably in our year-end list. Like, but it was so good. If you haven't seen it.
You are the only person.
My number one, bit of a smaller movie than Civil War. But I don't get how. It's one of my favorite directors. The cast is ridiculous. It is John Hillcoat's 999. Came out earlier this year. Chiwetel Ejiofor, Casey Affleck, Anthony Mackie, Woody Harrelson, Aaron Paul, Kate Winslet, Gal Gadot, Norman Reedus, Teresa Palmer, Michael Kenneth Williams, Clifton Collins Jr. That's the cast. And we've been spoiled in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so. When this movie came out, I'd say within the last 6 months of that. Because for so long, I've held Heat up on a pedestal where when it comes to crime movies, like Heat is there. Everything else is way, way below it. And then we got Sicario last year, which I thought was damn close. I thought Sicario was up there, not quite up to Heat, but I think it's right there, right below it. And then 999 this year, I think it's right there with Sicario as far as crime movies go. You have your gang of thugs led by Chiwetel Ejiofor who have to perform these robberies to get out from under the cusp of the Russian mob led by Kate Winslet. You have a couple of dirty cops, including Anthony Mackie, in that team. And the dynamic it plays is great because you have Anthony Mackie going to work and this new hotshot transferee, nephew of Woody Harrelson. Casey Affleck comes in. He's just the perfect cop in the wrong neighborhood. The dynamics are so good. And this is a movie that falls flat with a different cast because Chiwetel Ejiofor and Anthony Mackie are terrible, terrible human beings. They are pure villains. They are straight evil. But God damn it, I want them to succeed. I would have a beer with Anthony Mackie. Even though I know that he's done all these terrible things, I want to have a beer with him. I want to meet Chewie out for beers. Like, the charm they bring, even while being these terrible people, like, you still kind of root for them. And then you have Casey Affleck, who, with that Affleck charm, like, it's one of those movies that, who wins? Because you want everybody to win. Like, this is the kind of movie that watching it, it's like, you like pretty much everybody, and you just want everybody to end up with this happy ending, but it's not going to happen. Spoiler alert. And, I mean, maybe when I talk about crime movies and Heat and Nothing Coming Close, I'm sure a lot of people think The Departed is there. The Departed didn't do anything for me. I didn't really like The Departed, but I feel like 999 did for me what The Departed did for the people that love Departed. It's got the twists. It's got the characters. It's got all these other angles. I just think it's a much better done movie. Not to rip on, I mean, Scorsese and Hillcoat are in two different categories, but Hillcoat makes more movies for me. Like The Proposition and The Road, I think are two phenomenal, phenomenal movies. kind of had a misstep with Lawless, but I think studio got in the way of that one. But Triple Nine just came out. It was everything I wanted it to be. It's everything I wanted in a crime movie, and perfectly acted, perfectly directed. Like, it's just a really, really phenomenal movie.
I had relatively low expectations for that movie, not for any particular reason, because I do like Anthony Mackie a lot. I do like John Hillcoat. I just think that maybe if The Departed didn't do anything for you, I kind of feel like this movie didn't do anything for me. The twists in it, I thought, were almost painstakingly telegraphed. Anthony Mackie as a bad guy, he played that character well. Him and Chewie were great. They're both, well, Chewie specifically is given enough reason to do what he's doing where you don't want to root against him because you know why he's doing it.
And Mackie, to a point, is the same because he's kind of in it. Like, you feel like he never thought he would get that into it.
He didn't sign up for what they were asking him to do.
It's kind of...
And I feel like right along with Jesse Pinkman, we're all thinking that Mackie's not going to go through with what they're going to ask him to go through with, that there is going to be some kind of change within him. And he's trying to figure it out so that he doesn't...
He's conflicted.
Right.
He's in too deep. He can't change
exactly.
his mind.
He wants out, and you know, he gets out kind of in the only way that could have worked. But I thought that the story, I did think, played out almost paint-by-numbers-wise. And for whatever reason, I either love Aaron Paul in something or I can't stand him. I loved him in Smashed. He was phenomenal. I loved him in Breaking Bad. I thought he was great. In this movie, I didn't really see it from him. You know what I mean? I thought he was kind of floundering around. I love Norman Reedus. I thought he was great. I didn't get their dynamic until a little bit later in the movie, I guess.
I feel like that was the character, though. Like, that character was floundering, and I feel like with what Aaron Paul had to work with, I thought he did it well because he's going through a lot of the same stuff Anthony Mackie is. You know, he's lost some stuff like Chewie did. So right. He's got all these conflicts, but he doesn't have the level head that Chewie and Mackie does. He's going through the same kind of stuff, but you're
on
throwing drugs and alcohol involved, which make it all to where he doesn't, you know, Chewie and Mackie have made up their mind, like, what kind of people they are. Aaron Paul's gone through this loss, and he's trying to decide if he can change that or not. So, I mean, I guess we just disagree there. I thought he was good. His character was floundering. I thought for what he was given, I thought he did well with it.
Certainly, I don't think it's a bad movie. I'm not upset that I watched it or anything like that. It's an opinion. Like, if you think that it's on the level of something like Heat, then that's certainly, you're totally justified to think that. I thought it was a good crime movie. Am I ever going to watch it again? Probably not. Will I ever think about it again? Probably not. To me, it's just, it's not transcendent the way Heat was. I kind of think that dynamic of, you know, villains, if you want to call them that, because I mean they were bad guys,
terrible human beings,
right?
Yeah.
Your main characters were bad guys, but for whatever reason you kind of want to root for them. I feel like that stuff that we've seen before. I don't know what this movie did, at least for me, that made it different, that made it stand out. I mean, the performances were good. They were, even Aaron Paul notwithstanding. I mean, that doesn't take away from what the other guys did. I love Anthony Mackie. I'll watch him do anything.
And I mean, maybe it's also a genre thing, because, like, crime movie is where you're a film noir guy. I'm a crime movie guy. Like, I watch almost any crime movie I can of this vein. And I've been disappointed by so many. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I have the ones that I hold. Something like The Nice Guys comes out. Like,
yeah.
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Those are held up to a higher pedestal for you because of what they're supposed to be. And I feel like with Triple Nine and Sicario, like, those are the first two that came to me that succeeded because
I've Sicario I thought was great. I mean, I'll agree with you there. I thought that was phenomenal.
I put them side by side because I feel like everything was great about both of them. And I've seen so many poorly done attempts at this. And that's why when something like Triple Nine comes out, and I get it. For you, you don't watch as many crime movies as I, you don't hold them on the pedestal that I do. So Triple Nine comes out, it's like, oh, that's a good movie. But for me, like, I've seen so many bad ones of this genre, and this is, all I want are great movies in this genre. So when Triple Nine comes out, yes, this is what I want. When Sicario comes out, like, this is what I want. And I got them, and I got two. We went years without them since Heat. Decades. And, you know, I got two of them in the past, like, year. So I'm stoked on that.
Obviously, there's some also-rans for you that didn't quite make the
list.
The
only two we didn't mention, Finding Dory, another family movie with Idris Elba in the voice. So three of my top 10 so far have Idris Elba's voice in it. Wasn't as good as Nemo. It's going to be sound like such an off-the-wall comparison. I look at it a lot in the same way Kick-Ass 2, whereas...
Ah, yes.
Like, whereas in the first half hour to 40 minutes, it's like, oh, this is just... All they're trying to do is rehash everything. But then once the movie becomes its own, it's really, really good. And at the end, like, despite the shaky beginning, like, I'm really glad it's a journey I went on. Because Kick-Ass 2, hate the first, like, 30 minutes or so, but once it becomes its own movie... I love it. Finding Dory's the same. The new characters, Hank, Ed O'Neill is fantastic. Nemo and Marlin, it's really good. And I really like Ellen. It was really good. And The Boss, I'm a sucker for Melissa McCarthy. I enjoy Kristen Bell. I like her husband, Falcone. I feel like this is what I wanted Tammy to be, because Tammy was that, oh, written by her husband, directed by her husband. But it wasn't good. This one I really, really liked. I think Melissa McCarthy, she's a treat. Like, I think somebody like her is so rare that can do the comedy with the dialogue, the physical comedy, but yet she has this emotional depth to her to where you care about her as a person, not just as a character. And her characters always have these arcs. Like, she'll start at one point and she's really good at ending somewhere complete. Even in something where she's understated, like St. Vincent. Like, she started one place, ended another. And I'm just a big McCarthy fan. And I thought The Boss was... It was definitely pretty funny. I'm excited for her in Ghostbusters. Speaking of Ghostbusters, next week, an episode 4.5 years in the making.
Yeah, you could make that argument. Or... 32, I guess.
Yeah. One of our favorite movies of all time.
Ghostbusters.
It's the remake is coming out, I believe, next
week.
Like
it or not.
Yeah. I'm excited for it, and we'll talk about it next week. But we're going to take a look at the original 1984 Ghostbusters, directed by Ivan Reitman, starring Venkman, Spangler, Stance.
Zedmore.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited for that episode. I was excited for this one. I really liked. I feel like this one went about half a year itself. I feel like this was a very long episode. But I think we talked about a lot of good movies, which I'm fine with because there have been a lot of good movies this far, so far this year. Top of your head, what coming up this year other than Rogue One?
To be honest, I was going to suggest that instead of doing my top five that I'm looking forward to, because we're probably going to be pretty similar.
I didn't do a top five.
Yeah, well, not even that. But like, there's a couple that I want to see from this year that I've still missed. Keanu was one of them. I do desperately want to see Green Room.
That's one that I, yeah.
And specifically, I mean, not specifically, but, you know, with Yelchin dying, that kind of,
that's one that kind of slipped my mind. Like, I tried to see everything that I, Nice Guys and Warcraft, I haven't had a chance. Green Room is up there. Like, I want to see that as well.
I still want to see Hardcore Henry just for what it is. I don't anticipate it being
I'll
a great movie, but
one.
I'd like to see that. Pop Star, I still haven't got around to
it's
seeing.
Out of theaters, I believe.
Yeah, it didn't do well, but, you know, whatever. Neither did Hot Rod, and
yeah,
I
want to see Pop Star, too.
And Mother of Eyebrows, like Me Before You, I think I do want to see that.
I don't. Yeah. I like her. Yeah. But obviously, Rogue One, Morgan comes out, I believe, in September. That's Kate Mara, the girl from The Witch, directed by Ridley Scott's kid. Looks really awesome. There's two trailers out for it so far. Pete's Dragon, I think, looks oddly interesting. Like, I think that intrigues me. Sausage Party.
Yeah.
A couple of horror movies. Don't Breathe, the one with Jane Levy, and The Woods, the new Adam Wingert and Simon Barrett movie. The Accountant with Ben Affleck looks phenomenal.
Wait, excuse me? Run that by me again. The accountant with who?
Isn't it Affleck?
I think it's Anna Kendrick.
Affleck's
Don't
in it
look
as well.
So confused.
Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts, Assassin's Creed and Passengers. Like, there's a lot of movies that I want to see.
Passengers does sound awesome.
Yeah, and like going through the rest of the year, like I'm really excited. Like, we don't do our fall preview for the next few months, but it's going to be an interesting fall because there's not a lot of the fantasy film ball will be a lot of fun this year is all I'm saying, because there's no like heavy hit. Like, there's a lot of ones that, like, yeah, that's going to do well.
Oh, there's Star Wars. There's still of that.
There's the Star Wars spinoff.
Okay, don't take it.
No, I mean, I don't take it, but I'm saying it's not going to be your top movie ever. So
no, it's probably not going to be Force Awakens, no. But
I think there's other stuff that'll even out with that. So I'm excited for that. But yeah, it's going to be, I think 2016 is an awesome year so far.
Off to a good start.
2015, we kind of circled that on the calendar for a few years about how it was going to be massive. Yeah. And I think 2016 is using that momentum and carrying it. So we'll be back next year to talk about next week another movie that may end up in our top of the year when the new Ghostbusters comes out.
The 1984 Ghostbusters.
Yeah. But, so until then,
keep it up.